This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 3rd, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 106. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from around the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature, Alan Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker Daryl Plekis, to talk about the eventful October. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or in the same way that the BC Liberals had booze releases, the NDP has daylight saving time? Every time the BC Liberals in the Christie Clark era wanted to change the channel from a scandal, they would hold a photo op at a winery or brewery or announce some sort of liquor law deregulation. Well, the NDP under John Horgan has milked the old spring-forward, fall-back routine to the hilt. Like beer and wine, it's populist, and it happens twice a year. On October 23rd, a bill was tabled to keep BC on daylight saving time, or Pacific time, as it will be called. No standard and no saving. But it relies on Washington, Oregon, and California getting federal approval to do the same. If they don't change, BC won't change. But it sure has given Premier John Horgan a nice issue to go back to every time things start getting a little too hot, like they are on the ICBC file. Yeah, that's the biggest problem the NDP faces thanks to the legacy of the BC Liberal dynasty. By the way, did you set your clock back 1 hour on Sunday? What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, China manufacturing slumps for sixth straight month, October PMI below expectations. The Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, released by the National Bureau of Statistics on October 31st, stood at 49.3 in October, the lowest since hitting 49.2 in February. The non-manufacturing PMI, a gauge of sentiment in the services and construction sectors, came in at 52.8 in October, below analysts' expectations for a 53.6 reading. The figure dropped to its lowest level since February 2016. The official PMI is a gauge of sentiment among larger and state-owned factory operators, with 50 being the line between expansion and contraction in sector activity. In the survey, manufacturers are asked to give a view on business issues such as export orders, purchasing, production, and logistics. The decline in manufacturing activity was led by a deterioration in the new orders, which fell to the lowest level since June, with export orders declining to the lowest level since July. Overall, production continued to expand in October, but at the slowest pace since February. ABC News Australia's Michael Dalla reports, Australian Federal Police seize $17.3 million worth of property in Victoria, Tasmania, in Chinese money laundering probe. A mansion in Melbourne's east, newly constructed units, and more than 3,000 acres of Tasmanian farmland are among $17.3 million in property seized by authorities as part of an investigation into alleged money laundering by Chinese nationals. The operation followed a 2017 request from the Chinese Ministry of Public Security for help to identify two Chinese nationals suspected of laundering proceeds of crime in Australia. Chinese authorities believe the money was raised in China through real estate and bank loan fraud. Police in Australia allege two Chinese nationals moved about $23 million of proceeds of crime from China since late 2012. In the Japan Times, Kaori Kaneko and Linda Sieg report, Japanese fans deal with rugby loss after team's quarterfinal exit from World Cup. Japanese, captivated by their Brave Blossoms' historic run to the World Cup quarterfinals, are suffering a new form of bereavement, rugby loss, after their team fell to South Africa. Fans were still feeling bereft days after cheering the Blossoms in their 26-3 loss to the Springboks on October 20th. The tournament, the first Rugby World Cup held outside the heartlands of the game, has created an explosion of interest in Japan, including from many who had never watched the sport and had little, if any, understanding of its rules. Meanwhile, a restaurant in Kumamoto filed a criminal complaint against players and others related to Uruguay's national rugby team, accusing them of damaging its property on October 14th. The players visited after the team lost to Wales. A restaurant employee was injured, and 4 million yen damage was caused to the restaurant. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. King 5 News reports, state not at fault for Skagit River Bridge collapse, Supreme Court says. A truck carrying an oversized load struck the overhead support beams of the bridge in 2013, causing the structure to fall into the water. No one was killed, but three people in two vehicles plunged into the water. The state sued the Alberta trucking company, Mullen Trucking 2005 Limited. The company countersued, saying the state was partially at fault and should have to pay some of the damages. In a 5-4 decision, the court pointed to a state law that says vehicle owners or operators must exercise due care in making sure their vehicles can pass under a structure, and that the state can't be held liable for damages caused by an over-height vehicle. The bridge collapse closed Interstate 5, forcing the rerouting of traffic through rural areas. Czech News reports, Victoria sees one of the coldest Octobers on record. If you thought this October was colder than normal, you aren't wrong. Environment Canada meteorologist Armel Castellan said preliminary numbers show 8.5 Celsius as the mean temperature average, the average of the maximum and minimum temperatures, at the Victoria International Airport in October. This makes October 2019 the fourth coldest October on record, beating 1946. Records have been kept since 1941. Third and second place is tied, with a mean temperature average of 8.3 degrees Celsius in October 1984 and October 1972. The coldest October on record was 1949, with an average mean temperature of 8.1 degrees Celsius. In the Olympian, Wendy Culverwell reports, Washington Supreme Court says effort to recall Governor Inslee won't fly legally. A Thurston County effort to recall Washington Governor Jay Inslee from office is legally insufficient, the state's highest court ruled on October 31st. The unanimous decision upheld a Thurston County Superior Court ruling. Olympia resident Arthur West submitted a petition to recall the governor on December 13, 2018. West claimed that Inslee abdicated his duties by taking 32 out-of-state trips for his failed presidential campaign, that he kept a residence in Bainbridge Island, and failed to use his powers to address homelessness and to uphold environmental laws. This week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Pesca Salido loses again as judge thwarts defeated Trudeau Liberals' bid to dismiss fraud victims' lawsuit. Crew traveled by plane to make BC Hydro electric car ads. 10 years on, the day the Olympic flame touched down in Victoria. Exclusive, despite defying permit, Canucks owners allowed to operate Yaletown patio. Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. We're coming up on the first anniversary of the shocking suspension of BC Legislature Clerk Craig James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz. They were both suspended immediately by the legislature and walked off the property on November 20, 2018. More recently, the ripple effects of Auditor General Carol Bellringer's surprise resignation in late September were still felt when October began and Gary Lenz suddenly retired. Lenz was likely to be fired after a damning report by former Deputy Vancouver Police Chief Doug Lepard found that Lenz had lied in two investigations. Lepard called it an egregious breach of public trust. Instead of maintaining his innocence and his demands to be reinstated, Lenz quit. That report, which was released a week later, also put ex-Speaker Linda Reid under further scrutiny. Reed did not cooperate with Lepard's investigation. She eventually announced that she would retire at the end of her term in office. She has represented Richmond for the BC Liberals since 1991. Joining me this week on the Breaker.News podcast is Ellen Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker Daryl Plekis, to talk about the eventful October.
Talk about that moment that you found out that Gary Lenz had decided to retire, to quit, instead of to face the music after he had denied any wrongdoing for so many months.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was very interesting. I mean, certainly the timing, that the resignation or retirement was announced, a full week prior to the Lepard investigation being released. Obviously, Mr. Lenz did have the opportunity to see that report prior to his resignation, and sort of, as you referenced, retiring as opposed to, kind of facing the music. I thought that the timing was very, very interesting, to say the least. I mean, since then, Mr. Lenz has still maintained his innocence and essentially has said he has done nothing wrong. Well, Doug Lepard, the retired deputy chief of police for Vancouver and former chief of transit police, has thought otherwise. So, but we've seen this before with police officers and members that, have essentially been investigated under the Police Act, which is what this investigation was, essentially resigning or retiring. The difference is when a serving police officer is investigated under the Police Act and they're found to be guilty under the Police Act, essentially they don't get to retire. They don't get to resign. The record of employment has changed to sort of terminate it with cause. We weren't in a position to do that. So, of course, that resignation or that retirement was accepted. But, yeah, very interesting on the timing of that one, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, Gary Lenz could have, if he contested the findings of the report, he could have gone and sought a judicial review, and he didn't do that. There was the finding of Doug Lepard that there was an egregious breach of public trust. Those were Doug Lepard's words in this case, and that he found that Gary Lenz had lied to Beverly McLaughlin, who did her report on the allegations of misconduct back in May, as well as he said that Gary Lenz lied to him. There was also, within this report, questions about ex-Speaker Linda Reid, that she didn't cooperate with Doug Lepard's investigation. She chose to let a lawyer take his questions. She refused to do an interview. She claimed she was traveling, but in fact, she was in the Lower Mainland the whole time. That was a very, very odd situation.
Incredibly odd. I mean, I think as a serving and a sitting member of the Legislative Assembly of British Columbia, These folks represent the general public, and they should be at the highest level. And even the leader of the opposition, Andrew Wilkinson, has said, and I agree with him, anybody who is asked to participate in an investigation should do so, without any strings attached. I mean, that's your responsibility. If you've got pertinent information, or if the investigator feels that you may have pertinent information, I think you've got a duty and an obligation to participate, as does the leader of the opposition. It seems, MLA Reid didn't think that she had that obligation. And even if she was traveling, I mean, I don't know if she was traveling or not. I think you've, the Breaker News has discovered that she perhaps was in the Lower Mainland, but even if you were traveling, I think you have an obligation to say to the investigator, look, I'll be as helpful as I possibly can, and I will absolutely meet with you when I return. But that didn't happen. I'm not sure why it didn't happen, but I think it definitely should have.
Yeah, this is doubly odd, because Linda Reid was not speaker when the liquor shipment happened. And she was really only asked by Doug Lepard for an interview because he wanted to know what she knew and when she knew it after she became the speaker. Now, she has decided she will not run again in Richmond for the BC Liberals. She's been member of the legislature since 1991, the longest-serving member of the legislature. She's really going out on a whimper and with a cloud over her head. She still hasn't done an interview with anyone about this. Seems like she has a lot of a lot to hide there, which is very unfortunate, seeing that she has been in office for so long.
Yeah, I mean, she has been in office for a long time. She's been a champion for, you know, women in politics, for you know, various youth movements. I mean, I think she's done, you know, a lot of great things over the time that she's been an MLA, both, you know, in opposition and on government side when the BC Liberals were in power. You know, as Speaker, there's a lot of things to be proud of. But yeah, that does put sort of a bit of a cloud over it when there's you know, an active investigation and you essentially say, I'm not participating. And then to answer some of Doug Lepard's questions through her lawyer, and then just to point blank refuse to answer other questions. To me, that's not okay. You are a member of the Legislative Assembly. You should be setting the example for all British Columbians. And yeah, I think that, you know, going out with that sort of hanging over your head, it's not good. I'm not sure why she chose not to, but obviously I wouldn't be so bold as to speak for her. But it's quite confusing. It's discouraging, and I think all members ought to set that example, and she didn't.
We also learned that Jeff Meigs, the Chief of Staff to Premier John Horgan, met with the Speaker in July 2018, and at that meeting, Jeff Meigs was given an early version of the report on Craig James and Gary Lenz that Darrell Plukas eventually released in January 2019. Meigs did not keep the report, but instead he put it in the paper shredder. Can you talk a bit about that meeting and you know, that choice to not keep the document? There were more than one copy. There was more than one copy of that document, luckily, but that caused a great deal of furor in the legislature by the opposition.
Yeah, absolutely. So that meeting was attended by the Premier's Chief of Staff, Jeff Meigs, Deputy Speaker Raj Chauhan, as well as the Speaker and myself. And what that meeting was we wanted to sort of just give the Premier a heads up. We requested a meeting with the Premier. We wanted to, you know, just kind of fill him in on what was going on. He, in my opinion, rightly chose not to take that meeting, but had Mr. Meigs take it in his place, because obviously it's no secret he did not, you know, kind of get along with the clerk, the Premier, that is. So he didn't want, you know, there to be the optics of, you know, anything, you know, a cloud over the information and the items that the Speaker and I were doing. So he chose not to take that meeting. I think that was the right call. He's the Premier. He's political. He's, you know, responsible for the Executive Council, not for the items that we were doing, which was pertaining to the legislature. So we had that meeting. We filled Mr. Meigs in on it. That report, it was about a 20-25 page report, and it was a reference material for that meeting. He read through it. We discussed it for about an hour. And his advice to us was, look, this is some, you know, serious information here. I would suggest you go to the police. We advise him, we already have, and we will again, and we will continue to meet with police. So we were happy with that. Once that meeting was over, that report, he shredded it because, well, it wasn't his report to keep or to disseminate to anybody. He knew we still had our copy of that report, and he knew that the police had their copy. So, of course, he would shred it. And I think, you know, him being the chief of staff, I'm a chief of staff, I would have done the same thing. And I think that was the right thing to do. Of course, then, you know, in the House during question period, the BC Liberals, you know, raised some serious concerns about that, which I thought was a little bit interesting. I thought it was a little bit funny because I'm reminded that just back in May, when the Speaker and I really wanted to protect data when data was going missing and emails were going missing, and we wanted to protect data as part of our investigation for police, and we wanted to back up three hard drives of nobody political, the BC Liberals went nuts. They accused us of sneaking around and, you know, illegally backing up hard drives, which, of course, we were not. But I just find it very interesting that they had a big issue with, you know, protection of data back then. And then fast forward to this and, you know, they're essentially slamming the Chief of Staff to the Speaker for shredding a document that you know, essentially wasn't his to keep.
The throne speech last February promised to bring some transparency and accountability to the legislature that the government House leader, Mike Farnworth, had bowed to pressure from some of the legislative officers, including the Information Privacy Commissioner, Michael McAvoy. And he said, as well as in the throne speech, that the legislature will be added to the Freedom of Information Law. After so many years of having this law, the legislature was the one arm of government that was existing in a bubble of secrecy. We're waiting for this to happen. Any insight from your standpoint of when we might see this bill and see this come to fruition? Because this will be something that will be a legacy of your work and Daryl Plekis' work for many years to come, that to have this measure to have transparency legislated in the legislature will be a way to prevent corruption in the future.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it is long overdue. I've said that in the past. I think it's incredibly important legislation. We are very excited about that, you know, bill essentially being tabled and that legislation being enacted. There is no reason why the FOI's laws wouldn't extend to the legislature, and I think it is a great move on behalf of the Government House Leader and Solicitor General and government in general to do that. When they're going to do it, I don't know. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Minister Farnworth did reference that I think they would be looking at the next sitting, so that would be sort of February. But I know they are totally committed to that legislation, so that will be happening. And it's great because, like you say, it does. It's another tool in the toolbox now that can be used to ensure that there is, you know, transparency, open, honest dialogue back and forth. And yeah, you know, it's another tool against corruption.
That was Alan Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker Daryl Plekis, joining me on the Breaker.News podcast from Victoria. The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Movember Movement. Grow a mustache in November to raise money and awareness for men's health and well-being. It all began in Australia in 2003 and has spread worldwide. Its goal is to reduce premature male deaths by 25% by the year 2030. Go to movember.ca for information on how to support the cause. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 3rd, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on November 3rd in 1838, the Times of India, the world's largest circulated broadsheet daily newspaper in English, was founded as the Bombay Times and Journal of Commerce? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.